At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
When John McCarthy bumped into his old workmate, Alan Brennan, in Sydney's busy George Street in February 1963, McCarthy had very good reason to be surprised. 6 months earlier, he had attended Brennan's funeral and laid a wreath from Brennan's workmates. McCarthy's chance encounter with Brennan led police to William the Mutilator MacDonald and ended a series of murders the likes of which had never been seen before in Australia or the world, for that matter. William MacDonald was born Allen Ginsberg into a wealthy Orthodox Jewish family in Liverpool, England in 1924. A timid loner with a record of petty offences, Ginsberg changed his name to William MacDonald and migrated to Australia in 1955. In Brisbane in 1960, he strangled 55-year-old Amos Hirst to death in Hirst's room after a long drinking session. Fortunately for MacDonald, Hirst's death was mistaken as a heart attack. MacDonald moved to Sydney and in April 1961 took a job as a mail sorter at the PMG at Alexandria under his new assumed name of Alan Edward Brennan. On the rainy night of Sunday the 4th of June 1961, the now Alan Brennan, that's his new name, with promises of bottles of beer, lured a 40-year-old vagrant, Alfred Greenfield, to the Domain, a park on Sydney Harbour. Once there, he stabbed Greenfield 47 times and mutilated his body in such a fashion that when police arrived and flashed their torches on where the victim's body parts had once been, at first they had trouble identifying if it was a man or a woman. The missing body parts were later found in the harbour. 6 months later, on the 12th of November 1961, when 55-year-old derelict Ernest Cobbin was found propped up in a public toilet in Moore Park in East Sydney, police knew they had a repeat offender on the loose. Mr. Cobbin had been stabbed 55 times and the cubicle was the scene from a horror movie. He was mutilated in identical fashion as the previous victim and the body parts were missing. The mysterious killer was dubbed the Mutilator. After Frank McLean's still warm body turned up at 10 p.m. on Saturday night on the 31st of March 1962, only a few metres from busy Bourke Street, Darlinghurst, covered in stab wounds and with the usual body parts missing, the streets of Darlinghurst became deserted at night. The Mutilator Task Force was inundated with calls of sightings of the Mutilator. Citizens bolted their windows and doors and there wasn't a derelict to be found anywhere. I spoke to a detective about that particular time when he was on the loose and out, and the detective described Darlinghurst as being like when the Queen comes to visit. There was no one there, none of the usual derelicts sleeping in the parks.
We were little kids living in the bush, and everyone was talking about this. That, like, in the bush, they were calling him the mutilation murderer.
Yeah, that's it.
And it was and people were protecting their homes, that's even it. In the country. It wasn't just confined to Sydney.
Yeah, he had Sydney under lock and key there. Yeah. Soon after, in July 1962, Alan Brennan left his job at the PMG and purchased a small mixed business with a residence above in Burwood in Sydney's Inner West. On the 6th of June 1962, he lured 42-year-old convicted thief James Hackett back to his new address where he got him drunk and then stabbed him to death with a boning knife. He then set upon Hackett and mutilated him in his customary manner. Paranoid and terrified that at last he would be caught, the following morning Brennan dragged Hackett's body deep into the foundations beneath the building, placed the dead man's clothes beside him and packed his bags and fled to Brisbane, where he dyed his hair and scoured the papers every day for the news of the discovery of Hackett's body. But after months, there was still no mention of the body or a hunt for the missing Alan Brennan. That was him. What the mutilator didn't know was that after a month of complaints from neighbours of a vile smell coming from the shop, police broke in to find the decomposing body beneath the building. They assumed that it was the missing proprietor who had crawled semi-naked underneath his shop for reasons known only to himself and accidentally electrocuted himself. In its advanced state of decomposition, police could only determine that it was the body of a man about the same age as the shop owner, Alan Brennan, and seeing as they had no reason to suspect foul play, it was assumed to be an accidental death. The coroner issued a death certificate that Alan Brennan had died by accident. A death notice was placed in the paper, and his old workmates had a whip round, and John McCarthy laid a wreath at the funeral. So when a stunned John McCarthy bumped into the dead and buried Alan Brennan 6 months later at 1:30 on the afternoon of Monday the 22nd of April 1963, as he was walking in George Street, and said a shaky, "G'day, Alan," to which the dead man replied,
"G'day."
"You seem to have got a big shock by seeing me, John. Why is that?" "I believed you had died," McCarthy stammered. "I laid a wreath at your funeral." It was then that the penny dropped, and Brennan said, "Leave me alone," and fled into the oncoming traffic. John McCarthy went immediately to the central police station and reported the incident. The desk sergeant told him he was drunk and to come back tomorrow when he sobered up. McCarthy went back and they told him to go away again. So McCarthy rang crime reporter Joe Morris at the Daily Mirror.
Oh, I remember Joe
Morris. Yes, very famous police roundsman he was at the time. He rang Joe Morris at the Daily Mirror, who ran the famous headline, "The Case of the Walking Corpse," which forced police to exhume the body, which was identified by its fingerprints as that of the mutilator's last victim, James Hackett. When the coroner discovered familiar mutilations on Hackett's corpse as the mutilator's previous victims, the police at last knew that they were onto the elusive murderer. But realising that another man had been buried in his name and that he could have literally gotten away with murder, the mutilator fled. A nationwide search, aided by the newly introduced... This was the first time ever that identikit photos have been used, George. Huh. And I've got them, actually, and gee, they look like him. They introduced identikit pictures on the front page of every paper across the nation, and the banner headline, "The Case of the Walking Corpse," eventually flushed the mutilator out from where he was working on the railways in Victoria, and he confessed to 5 counts of murder. He pleaded insanity, claiming that as he murdered each victim, it reminded him of a corporal who had raped him when he was a 19-year-old soldier in the Lancashire Fusiliers, and the experience had condemned him to a life of homosexuality. And to make sure the corporal couldn't do it again in his madness to anyone else, he sliced off the offending body parts. Even though he was obviously as mad as a cut snake, in those days, they allowed the jury to determine whether someone was guilty or insane. The jury found William McDonald both guilty and sane at the time of the murders, and he was sentenced to life in prison, never to be released. After he tried to bash another prisoner to death with a bucket, he was sent to Morisset Hospital for the criminally insane, where he stayed for 20 years before being released back into the mainstream prison population. After 10 years of applying, I finally got to interview William McDonald in 2000 for my book, Australia's Serial Killers, and ended up doing a segment about his life on 60 Minutes, when I was working for 60 Minutes. I spent a year on and off interviewing old Bill, as he was known in jail, and I wrote two books about his life.